No, we're, he's going to come in sort of in the middle and do the limitation.
So, Enyo is going to jump in whenever he's ready. So, Enyo from ROV.
Thank you, Emilio. Thanks for inviting me to speak. My name is Mark Benninger. I'm the Geographic Information Officer for the Canada LA. I'm the Chief Information Office, so it's a fairly new title. Focusing on GIS, Emilio, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Elio Salazar. I'm with the Registrar Recorder on the GIS section head. And I'm going to do a demo of the CAMS application that we have with Mark to talk about a little bit. And I'll just do a short demo of the application.
So the one of the questions I have, how many folks here are from the County of LA? Okay, a few. So how many are, obviously the rest are not. How many are from the cities? Just counties. Okay. All right, well. That limits the people that I'm talking to. So you all understand what I'm going to talk about, I think. A little better. All right, let's go ahead and get started. So I'll talk very briefly, because we don't have a whole lot of time, about my role as the GIO. The title of the slide was it? Assessor's Office, the Team Player. I didn't have much of a choice to disagree. No, but the assessor has been a great team player with a lot of the county departments, and obviously it's very valuable information. So I'll talk about a little bit about how we use the GIS data, the Geographic Information Systems data that comes out of the assessor's office, for some of the things that maybe if you're in the trenches in building cadastral land bases, of how that actually gets used and how valuable that is, and then. Now, I'm sure you may have already talked about parcels in the public domain. So, all right, go ahead, next slide. People here familiar with GIS, I'm sure, right? Geographic Information Systems. So we're capturing and storing data that's linked to location. We have layers of information. And basically, there's been a number of studies, some say 90%, but it's at least 70-80% of government data is linked to locations. Property is obviously a very large component of that, but you know, your clients, where are emergencies, so where's the fire perimeter boundaries, where are perhaps the risks for debris flow that was just coming out in the last few days, where are our assets, and of course jurisdictional boundaries, which in our county of 88 cities and one unincorporated area is crazy and very important. So, all right, next slide. So, my role, briefly, is to develop a county-wide approach to GIS and GIS data. So from our Enterprise GIS strategic plan, so those are some of the listings that are there. Those are the top level mission that we're trying to put together. Develop standards, communicate the value of GIS to departments. Obviously the third item here is kind of related to what I'm talking about today, which is to encourage collaborative efforts in terms of getting people to play together, making sure that GIS is available from day to day for day to day operations. Maximize cost, you know, cost effectiveness, all those other things. So you can read that yourself, and I can always put the slides. I'll send those to Amelia. All right, next slide. So actually, hold on a second. In my rush, I forgot to. This piece of paper, I'm going to hand this out. I only brought 40 copies, but the state of California did a survey of a lot of jurisdictions, asking. What are the most important data layers for what they call the spatial data infrastructure? So if you think about GIS, it's composed of layers. This is a list of all the different layers that have been identified nationally as making up a spatial data infrastructure. What's interesting is the top group here, those have federal departments that are mandated to take responsibility for that. And can you imagine which one the top one is? That's the cadastral fabric. What's interesting is that it's not a federal mandate, but that is addressing. So Julia is going to talk about that. Buildings and facilities, you can see basically the breakdown. So I think this to me is a fairly good guide, and I'm sorry for those of you who it doesn't make it all the way to the back. But this gives me a direction in terms of prioritization of where we're trying to go for GIS. And as you can see, cadastral information is probably one of the top four or five layers that are out there. All right, go ahead. So the assessor is a team player. Parcel data in the past has actually been quite difficult for even county agencies, county departments to access. In the past, some departments paid the assessor, if you can believe that. We actually paid our from one department to another to access the data. But that's been changing dramatically. I think the technology is making that a lot more viable. And so what's happening is that the assessor is working with county-wide systems in order to provide access. Some of the things that we're trying to do on a more technical level is to upload parcels into a central location. So that's where I work with Emilio, into a centralized GIS database. And then there's another section within the assessor, the assessment section, that is updating the parcel information weekly. And what's really powerful nowadays with the technology is that that information can come up at separate times, doesn't have to be integrated. Well, it comes up, it gets integrated on the fly within GIS databases. So basically, an SQL query stitches those two things together, and we have a seamless parcel data file that's up to date. So some of the parcel boundaries, you know, there's the synchronization capabilities now within ESRI's GIS software, which make it very, very easy, or relatively easy to put that, to have an authoritative source synchronized to a publication source. And that's really the focus of what I'm trying to do, is to make the information available more widely. It gives us a single location where people in the county can come and access that parcel information along with all of the other data layers that make a spatial data infrastructure. So if you had to go to 20 different departments to get 20 different layers of information, and each one is primarily responsible internally for supporting internal customers, what we're building is a location that's responsible for distributing information to all the other departments. So currently this information or these systems are available internally only, but the technology can support, I just need to flip the switch and I can open those systems up. So, all right. One of the examples, Nick showed one of the ArcGIS websites. This is a parcel search application so that people in the Department of Public Works can find parcels by their owner name, by their address, get reports, build mailing lists, just right out of the box. So it doesn't take as much expertise to know what's going on. Next slide. The way we're moving is with ArcGIS Server. How many of you are familiar with ArcGIS? Okay, yes. ArcGIS Server allows us, as Nick was briefly mentioning, to provide information as a service. What you see on the left is what's called a REST endpoint. It's a web framework. It's internet technology that allows computers to talk to each other. So once we put the information up as a service, it's not an application, it's just a service that pushes the information out. And one of the options is obviously to draw a map of the parcels. So that's an example of a map. Now, the key thing is if I make this map fast as Google, and is the information that's required by many departments, we only need to update it once, we only need to put it in one location, and everybody gets the benefit from it, including in the future cities or people who are participating in imagery. So the imagery can come in as a separate layer, so people can build applications built by these building blocks of all the layers without having to stitch them all, to post them all, put them all together. So to go through where the assessor is, kind of go into detail where the assessor is working with us on some enterprise projects, I want to talk briefly about the Department of Public Works cadastral land-based project, which I think is going to be a sea change in the way that we organize our information, the countywide address management system, and LARIAC building information that's coming up. First of all, I think I flipped that around, the slide was out of order. I'll have to go back, but some of the ways that departments are actually using parcels, and again, the way I look at this is, for a non-cadastral person, that's me, right? I think of parcels as fairly simple. It's who owns what, but as I can tell, there's a lot of processes that go into it, the legal restrictions and legal requirements that go into that. But for the public, they think of a property usually as somebody owns a piece of land, and that's pretty much it. For residential property. So what that gets used from, and that's actually the information that Emilio is one of the things that we use a lot of, is just what are the property boundaries, the tax assessment boundaries. So what is that used for? We determine losses, so when the fires come through, we can quickly determine what the loss is, or what the potential loss is for flooding, or for debris flows, or for the LA River overtopping. we can do studies to ensure that departments like the library are getting their full tax, that they've actually been, that people have voted on themselves. So the library wanted to make sure that everybody that was part of their tax assessment was actually paying the tax. Supports health and welfare to determine where property values impact other other cases such as obesity or park availability. Driving the uptake of green technologies, and I'll talk about that in a second. Obviously, through the addressing, dispatching, and emergency response are very critical, and the personal information has a lot of that. Some of the interesting things that we've seen is counterterrorism. If you have a suspect and you're tracking them with a GPS and they stop at somebody's house repeatedly, you can actually determine the links perhaps and follow through and see what that person is involved with, so you actually can track things that you may not have realized in the past, and that's actually been used before. Welfare fraud, so you got somebody who's welfare, lives in a $2 million house, things like that. One of the things I kind of have in my pipe dream is the flood requirements are very, very, based upon very rough data, national, really bad, or let's call it coarse elevation models. So with the LARIAC data, if we can overlay the parcels on a better flood model, maybe we'll actually save homeowners money because they don't do entire flood basin constraints. They don't charge flood insurance for the entire basin. It can actually be based upon reality, not what somebody put together 40 years ago. So this is just the beginning. The CDC is doing this after the fires. The Community Centers for Disease Control wants to go out and interview people and around the fire perimeters to let them know about all the vector disease control diseases. So many options, many things. Go ahead. One of some of the simple examples when you're looking at fire locks, this is the station fire perimeter along with parcels and aerial imagery. You can see that the fire perimeter boundary isn't exactly accurate. It didn't burn half of a house, things like that. But knowing the parcel information, you can actually quickly do an assessment to determine the risk in terms of property risk. Next. So going back to the green information, we put up this website called the LA County Solar Map, which basically we did a GIS analysis of solar potential, but it has to be tied back to a property. It's the property owner who's going to go and actually do that analysis and determine, look, I can put X amount of solar, what's the financial viability? We can do analysis based upon property value and what's the likely uptake on solar technologies, green technologies. So these are some of the examples of how, obviously you know how valuable this information is, but where it gets used in ways I didn't even think possible. So pretty neat. So one of the major projects that, I will switch back, one of the major projects I think that's moving forward is the Public Works Cadastral Land Base update. So Public Works maintains the cadastral land base parcel information. They maintain the parcel information for unincorporated contract cities, which has, these are just three, I think there are 20 plus layers of information that are in there. So I just said parcel information, but that's lots, easements, cut lines, all of that. It's maintained in CAD, but Public Works is going to update that and convert it into a GIS maintenance system and GIS storage system, which means that all of the little slivers that are at the end of every little parcel are going to have to be topologically integrated, made into real polygons. It's a big project. But once you get to that, GIS is a more efficient technology for storing and querying that information. You don't have 2,000 individual CAD tiles anymore, CAD drawings. It's a single seamless database that can be accessed from many different sources. And it does, by enforcing topological rules, we do expect that will improve the actual quality of the data in a lot of ways. All right. Next slide. So the assessor is going to be very critical to that. At first, Public Works thought that they're going to have to do this by themselves, start from scratch, take all their CAD files, go one at a time, and convert this into GIS. But the assessor's been doing GIS for 10 years. They've already been maintaining all this information, so they've been taking the CAD files that have been coming from the recordation process and the digital submission and converting it to GIS. And what was interesting is that there was years of disagreement as to whose data was more accurate versus whose represented reality more. So what turns out is that both files were actually very, very accurate. They actually meet each other's requirements pretty well. So the assessor's experiences over the past 10 years is definitely helping Public Works reduce the cost of this project, improve the outcomes of it, and I see, from the CIO perspective, a better long-term integration between the two departments because they're using the same technology. So you don't have two different technology bases anymore. So, and as we move forward, the idea would be to eliminate the duplication of some of the efforts. Where those things overlap, we don't need to have the incorporation of a new subdivision twice, one into the CAD base and one into the GIS base. Next. The next piece I want to talk about, which I'm sure you're aware of, is that the addressing information tends to be very, very critical. So if you look at Thomas Brothers, well, their actual source of information, I believe, was the assessor file. They would get a dump of the assessor data every year and use that to find new addresses and build their new maps. Well, you know, the one thing that does is we've gone that course and that's been very, very, very useful, but we're building a new address management system because that's probably one of those critical layers of information that a government maintains in terms of usefulness to the public, locating where things are. So the Countywide Address Management System, or CAMS, was developed by the Registrar Recorder, County Clerk, who needs to know where all the 4.5 million voters are in the county of LA. So if they can't find a voter, they're actually not doing their duty, and that's their legal requirement. So the goal was to build a central location to maintain the addresses and access, to provide access to them, give your local jurisdictions their control so cities can maintain their own addresses. And the key thing is it includes street addresses, point addresses, which is the new frontier of addressing, and landmarks, so you can type in Staples Center and find it. But the addresses actually, you know, the Registrar Recorder built this looking forward that, okay, now we've got all the 10 million addresses, now we want to know where all the apartments are so you can dispatch someone to the front door, you know, on the second floor of a large unit, or handling these very large apartment complexes that we have. So, and our long-term goal here is the last one, is it's going to be public domain. One of our big problems is if there's a huge disaster, like an earthquake, in Katrina, the biggest problem was people knew addresses, but addressing systems were wiped out at that point. So they didn't know where those addresses were, and it was in a proprietary system. So we'll get that information out there so that we don't have those issues. All right, next. So, I'll mention this briefly. There's a CAMS online error reporting system that at this point allows people who see errors can actually report them. So you can see it's being used across the county. And I think Elio at this point this would be a time to segue. He'll give you a demonstration of how that information is used, how the edits are actually made.
Okay, I'll talk a little about this slide. What you're seeing here is the CAMS online, and this is on the internet. And all those marks that you see on there are workovers. This is errors that supposedly people find, and they can actually enter a work order through the internet specifying something that's wrong, and then it gets to us and we can take a look at it, or it gets to the county. Where's the desktop?
It should be down below.
Where?
Oh, you can't see that?
Oh, there it is. Okay, and this is the CAMS desktop application. This is where we maintain the streets and the points. For the streets, we maintain address ranges. For the points, it's single addresses. And you can see that one of the layers in here is the parcel database. And there's a relationship between the points and the parcels, which is maintained by the system. If I was to add target, I can select the street lines if I wanted to make changes to the street line. or to an address point. And you can see that inside the CAMs, we have property addresses, route marker addresses, intersection addresses, and landmark addresses. So I'm going to select the property address. And I'm going to add a new point. So when the screen comes up, it's a little slow. You see there are various tabs on the top of the form. Just when I added the point, it automatically picked up the zip code. Tells me where it was input, the source's CAMs, and we put this in because initially we brought in points from the assessor, the centroids of the parcel, and there was also about 15 cities that gave us their points that they had, so we identified in CAMs where that point came from. And if I go to parcel information, you see that it automatically picked up the assessor parcel number. So the point is related automatically to that parcel that it was put into. And at one point, I guess when we have all the information, when all that, we can add with something that Mark mentioned, we can add a building if that turns out to be a condo or an apartment. We can add a building name. We can add, if we go to the wizard, we can add a building range, we can add a floor range, or we can add a unit range. You know, a building might have 10 floors, so we can add floors 1 through 10. And each one of those floors might have 30 or 50 units, so we can add every one of those units. And we can identify that point to that specific location on the building. When I go to the site address, I'm going to give it the address. I have matched and I have independent addresses. When I start inputting the address number, it's going to look at nearby streets. And if that number falls within a range of the streets, it's going to give you a choice as to which one it matches to. I could also set it as an independent address. I think there's cases in LA County where streets have disappeared because of freeways, but the address is still there. So that becomes an independent address. So this is someone at the site address. Put 675. And it gives me here match street 9. So it's going to, if I drop down the box, it's going to give me a list of the streets that it matches to. And it finds two, Sierra Madre and Monterey Place. Now I know that this is Sierra Madre. Monterey Place is down here a little bit lower. There's a buffer as to where it finds the matching addresses. In this case, I know it's Sierra Madre, so I'll select Sierra Madre. And it shows me where it matched to. It has this address range, and this is my address, 675. Another thing that it has is the property information. Here I can input the track, base, lot, and unit number if I have those. And I can specify what type of dwelling that is. Condominium, townhouse, single family. These are the ones we have so far. We can add to these. So I'm going to say it's a single family. And once I hit OK, it applies the changes to that point, and it'll put the label there with the number of 675. Now, from CAMS, we generate address reference files every weekend automatically. We have a process that runs every Sunday, and it outputs the lines and the points. And on the attributes of the points, there's a reference to the assessor parcel number. So there's some applications. One of that we're planning on together with Mark is for the registrar recorder, when people come in to record documents, the department that handles that has a problem sometimes matching that address to a parcel number. So we're in the process of talking about building a service. They would input some information, and from the reference files from CAMS, they would get the parcel data for that address. And I said the assessor's parcel is a system background layer inside of CAMS. And because of this relationship, it has to be, you know, up to date. We're in the process also of replicating the parcel database from the assessor's database to the EGIS Enterprise database and to the CAMS database. So there'll be a process inside of CAMS that will be running every night and updating the assessor parcel number on the points where the parcels change. So that'll be up to date every day, and every weekend when the reference files are output, everything will be up to date. Yeah. I guess that's it for CAMS, isn't it? There's a lot more things that it does, but that would take quite a while to run through all the functions of the application. So.
Thanks, Julia. Where that is also coming into effect is that the county is also looking at, it's called PALMS, the Permitting and Land Management System. Because of the complexity of all things moving on, you know, moving around, the way documents move between many different departments, what actually is interesting and what ties all of these documents together is either the parcel number or actually the address. So if you're looking at permitting, while the parcel number is important, it's actually the address that gets permitted. So that's why this tie between a parcel and an address is actually very, very critical, and where CAMS is actually going to play a big role in providing that information. So, but as we move forward with this, the assessor support and the access to the information that they have has been absolutely critical. As Elio said, they were the first source of address points. They were the parcel centroid was the best information that was out there, and it's what we started from. The other thing that it does for us is, as we edit our information, it's a quality control mechanism. The assessor actually, you know, is also editing the addresses separately, and so it gives us the quality control mechanism for that. We are also able to compare the U.S. Postal Service street names with the parcel map names, where we tend to get discrepancies with our addresses. There's been many cases where the assessor has a different street spelling, and road versus street, then the USPS, our address file, and the assessor disagree. Those tend to be the most complicated resolution things to resolve, but because the assessor's is the authoritative source, actually the USPS will take the county street name changes, so they change their streets to match what the assessor has. The problem that we run into is when the parcel database and the parcel map disagree, then you got a problem. So the parcel history ensures that we actually have a track back as to how things change, how addresses were created. We also have more accurate city boundaries, and actually we're creating a very high, a parcel accurate zip code boundary. So the zip codes, and the USPS does not put those on maps, but we're actually able to put those onto maps to the parcel accuracy, and regional planning under Nick is actually leading that effort to do that. So some of the outcomes for CAMS, You know, we expect that the CAMS process and our updates of addresses will give us $1 billion in extra funding over the next 10 years because we found 150,000 housing units that the Census Bureau did not have. Of three, an average of three people per house at $2,200 a year in federal funding, that adds up very, very fast. So, especially in these days, you know, starting 2011, that should hopefully help out. And that goes across all the jurisdictions. So it doesn't matter that it's spread. It's not just the county, that's all cities. So those are the federal funds tied to the census. It's also used for dispatching. So, you know, the better the information that we have in there, the more lives we actually save. So, all right, next slide. Benefits the assessor. They also get a large amount of quality control put onto their database. We've sent in 40,000 street name changes. The zip code corrections, when we're done, will be very interesting. When we have actually looked at address matching, the assessor file, there's probably hundreds of properties that actually get the wrong mailing zip code in the zip, but it's the correct address in that zip code. So the mail is getting delivered to the wrong place. So those are major issues that we can resolve with a GIS overlay that just says, make all these zip codes, you know, change all of these zip codes. Now the assessor has to accept that, but let me put my request, when you go back, this is one of the things that we've run into as we built our address management system, because parcel databases do not include information about publicly owned parcels. They don't have the site addresses. Right? It's a major problem. The assessor doesn't generally care because they can't tax it, but that information does get fed into dispatching systems, so if, you know, it's one way to get your building into the dispatch file. So obviously, generally, dispatch files know, you know, the dispatchers know where government, large county buildings are, large government buildings are, but schools tend to be a major issue. It's, you know, the assessor being the authoritative source for information, unless we don't know where that school is until we need to hand locate those things, because the assessor provides the best point address. And when we dealt with Thomas Brothers, for example, they would get the jurisdiction wrong on certain areas where just the school was part of one city. The city of Arcadia extended across the street and only into the school. And so that turned out to be a problem when the Thomas Brothers file didn't realize that was Arcadia because there was no information from the assessor saying where the city was. So the site information is very important to maintain. It's usually not that big of a deal in terms of the overall course of work. So if you can, try to include that. We try to do that in the county. Another thing I see as a real benefit coming forward, the Imagery Acquisition Consortium has signed a contract to develop building outlines. So we will have a building outline with the same accuracy as our aerial imagery for every building over 64 square feet in the city of LA and over 400 square feet in the county of LA, which basically takes into account most large structures. So I think for the assessor, it will help assessment to know that where the buildings are. You can do analysis to compare the number of buildings that are found on a property. If we show two buildings and the assessor database only shows one, you can do that in an automated process to determine, you know, which properties may have actually done some building without being permitted. Our goal is to tie the address and owner information to a building as well, so that we know an owner owns X number of buildings, and the address will be at the front door of a building, or for large buildings, we can actually put the entrances to those buildings. So our County Hall of Admin has three entrances on three different streets. So it's also useful for zoning information because, again, land use is, unless it's agricultural, but for urban areas, land use is not the land that's being used. It's actually the building that's actually being used for those purposes, whether or not it's a condominium, a four-story, you know, four-unit apartment. It's actually the building. So it's stored in the parcel database, but primarily as that's kind of the best that we could have done for the past 100 years. I think that with building information, we'll be able to look at actual buildings themselves. And again, emergency response. So we expect that to be delivered in July. And again, the focus is to make it public domain because I think that's going to be a very valuable data set. But in order to maintain some of our licensing for a little while, it'll be 3 years from now. So, food for thought. I don't know what happened here earlier. The Santa Clara lawsuit is out there. Parcel data is now publicly available, public domain, for better or for worse. So the things I'm kind of curious about to hear from you is, what are the impacts of parcel maintenance? Does it impact funding streams that actually help to maintain the parcel data? Right, that we were able to license the LARI Act information to maintain our funding streams, but as, you know, as mappers, like national mappers, you don't have that option anymore. Are there other alternatives? Parcel fees, some jurisdictions actually, you know, when you do de-recording, you actually have a fee associated with that to maintain the parcel information. You know, one thing I hear a lot from the assessor is, okay, now it's out there, does the public understand what this actually is? What parcels actually mean? What's the difference between legal versus tax assessment parcels? What are the update cycles? Because, the minute that is published, it's out of date. Do you guys get the credit for the maintenance? And I think, you know, the way I see it, a lot of this information resonates across all of the GIS data that's out there, which leads me to my last slide, is Google the source of parcels? You can't really see it here, but I don't know if you're familiar. Google Maps just put parcels onto LA County and a number of where they could get their parcels. So what do you think the public thinks? Google's the source of parcels. They have the parcels. They claim to be the, you know, these, they integrate it, but they don't say what the accuracy is, who they got it from, who to contact to go get more information. But there's a perception here that we all are sort of going to deal with, but how do we handle that? So it's kind of a question, a food for thought. But it is interesting because what happens next when they actually, like in Santa Clara, now they have access to the attribute information, will they be able to click on Google and get the owner information? And my thought was, if it's wrong, who are they ultimately going to come back to? You guys, not to Google. Google will say, well, we just got that from, you know, from our local jurisdiction. So just something to think about. All right. So, thank you. If there are any questions, back here. Yes?
Do you have a separate data model for your address data?
Yes. If you are interested in that, Ilya, we've actually just provided to Sacramento County, but...
The address data model that we use in Jams was taken both from the ESRI data model and from the federal, was it state data, is that what they call it? It's from that. We combined those two and added some of the requirements that LA County has. But those two were the base for the address model that we use. What we do have, we can make available to do if somebody wants to.
Enjoy your social.